move on to item number three, which is a discussion of traffic safety on South Park Street. How we'll handle this is how we normally do, which is we'll hear from staff with comments first, with a presentation first. And that may include staff from traffic engineering, the transportation department, and the police department. Then we'll hear from, I know we have people registered to speak, so we'll hear from staff first, then we'll hear from people who have registered to speak, and then we'll move to questions and discussion. So just wanted to go over our process. So Yang, are you going to kick it off, or Christoph, who's going to kick it off?
I'm going to kick it off, but Yang will be sharing his screen.
Okay.
Are we seeing the full screen mode?
Yes, we are. Thank you.
We got it. So yes, we are. We are here to talk today about Park Street, and we've got a number of things to talk to you about, but I wanted to start on what I think is the appropriate somber note here. Next slide. The work we do is fundamentally all about people. It is about making cities that are good to live in, and that's what we have to keep in mind as we do this. Next slide. This is the list of people who have died in crashes on the streets and highways of Madison in the last year. And these are not numbers. These are people. Everybody here had family and had friends. Everybody here had a life that they can't fully live. So we want to start this presentation by remembering them and thinking of everybody who knew them. And when I look at this list, I see an obvious call to action. I look at this and say that we should not see this as normal. I look at this and say we should not consider that this is an acceptable byproduct of getting people where they need to go. And I look at this and think that we should be doing everything we can to not add any more lists, any more people to this list. So I know there's a lot of grief in the community. I know there's a lot of anger in the community, and I can assure everybody, we on the staff here at the City of Madison absolutely share that. And that we know that there's really nothing we can present today that's adequate to all of that. So I should introduce myself. I'm Christoph Spieler. I'm Director of Transportation for the City of Madison. And I'll be joined today by Yang Tao, as well as by the police. And we also have a representative of WSDOT here today to answer any questions. Next slide. What we figured we could do today is talk a little bit about what we know about Park Street, answer some of the factual questions we've heard. We can talk about our general approach to street safety. We'll talk about how we respond to crashes like this. We'll talk a little bit about Park Street specifically, and we'll talk some about the complexity of who owns and designs streets. As I mentioned, we also have MPD here to give us some updates, and WSDOT as well. And I want to note that we are here in all humility. I don't think any of us ever think we have done enough. And we definitely don't think we have all of the answers. So we are here not just to present, but to listen and to be part of an ongoing discussion that will not end today and hopefully will continue as we figure this out and figure out how to make our streets safer. And with that, I will hand it to Yang.
Thank you, Christoph. Good evening, everyone. I will give everyone here, especially the community members at the meeting, a quick overview of Madison's Vision Zero program, but also provide everyone including the company members, a quick update. So Vision Zero is one of the very important initiatives of the mayor and the city council. The mayor and the council started initiative back in 2020, and it's a priority for us. You know, especially for Mayor Satya, as many of you know, this is also a deeply personal issue for her, as she lost family members due to traffic crash herself. You know, she deeply understands the issue. I would like to start by talking about what's Vision Zero. Vision Zero is relatively new in US, but it is an internationally recognized strategy aimed at eliminating traffic fatalities and severe injuries while increasing safe, healthy, and equitable mobility for all road users. So Vision Zero has a few key differences compared to our traditional traffic safety approach. So traditionally, we think that the traffic deaths are inevitable. It's just a part of the price to pay for our mobility. However, Vision Zero thinks that traffic deaths are preventable. We don't have to accept that traffic deaths has to be associated with our mobility. And we used to demand perfect human behavior. Well, Vision Zero recognizes that humans are humans. Humans make mistakes. However, it doesn't mean that when we make mistakes, ourselves or someone else on the road has to die. So Vision Zero integrates human feeling into what we do. Also, previously, we focus a lot on preventing collisions. However, Vision Zero thinks that not all the collisions are the same. So let's focus our resources and let's try to prevent the fatal and severe injury crashes. Those injuries that really cause big damages to our society. And traditionally, we used to emphasize individual responsibility. So you are on your own. However, though, Vision Zero tried to break the silos and emphasize a systems approach. Everyone works together in a system to achieve best results. And we used to think that, you know, saving lives is expensive. We cannot afford to do this. However, Vision Zero tells us saving lives does not necessarily has to be overly expensive. As long as we can be smart, we can be data focused, and we can do things consistently. So to achieve Vision Zero, a really important tool is the safe system approach. So this framework on the screen right now is was released by the United States Department of Transportation back in 2020, along with the rollout of the National Roadway Safety Strategy. So again, you know, this framework recognizes that death and serious injuries are unacceptable. Humans make mistakes. Humans are vulnerable. And responsibility is shared. Safety is proactive. And also redundancy is crucial. So, you know, working from a system, we need to build safer roads. We need to set safer speed limits on our streets. We need to adopt and use safer vehicles. And we need to encourage people on the road to be safer. And also, we need to improve post-crash care. you know, here in Madison, we actually adopted developed and adopted our own safe system approach before US DOT. So we actually did ours back in 2020 when we started the Vision Zero initiative. So our components are a little bit different, but largely match what US DOT does. Again, we focus on making our streets safer, creating safe streets. So we do that through design of the streets in a geometry, you know, as we discussed here many times at this body, and also managing speed of our street in a mindful manner. A second component for us is also safe people. So we work with the community to build a positive safety culture to encourage safe behaviors for drivers, cyclists, pedestrians, everyone in the system. And we work on safe vehicles, promoting use of vehicle technologies as simple as use of a seatbelt or to things like emerging technologies. You know, one different component that we included here is safety data. We really feel like we need to rely on data to guide our decision-making process so that we can address the issues in a smarter way. We also incorporate enforcement into our framework. And we also do that in a way that it's safety focused. I will talk a little bit more about that as I get to that section. You know, as you all know, we implemented many, many projects in the last few years. One of the things I want to emphasize is our speed management program. As you know, it has been a very controversial topic for our community, right? You know, for the last a few dozen speed limit reduction projects we did on major streets, and also for the two pilot neighborhoods for 20 is plenty, and to the citywide rollout, you know, every time we do the project, we heard a lot of really positive feedback from our community members. We also hear a lot of criticism from other community members. So here, I want to say that speed really matters. So this graph on the screen shows why. These are just a simple law of physics, right? At a higher speed, you create more kinetic energy that's going to cause more damage. This diagram shows that, you know, when a pedestrian is hit by a vehicle in a crash, the likelihood of survival at 20 miles per hour, that survival rate is 87%. At 30 miles per hour, that declined to 60%. And at 40 miles per hour, dramatically, that reduced to 27%. And I think, you know, Captain Worley will talk more about this when he gave update on the investigation, you know, for the last, our most recent devastating crash that took away the life of Sasha. At that speed, nobody on this planet will survive that kind of impact. And also, speed, the impact of speed does not stop here. You know, here we're talking about when crashes did happen, right? But, you know, when we drive at different speeds, it also influences a couple other things. One is our field of vision. The higher speed we drive at, the narrower our field of vision becomes. So our vision has become more focused at a higher speed. We're just not able to notice a lot of things anymore. We're not able to see you know, pedestrian crossing the street that well. We'll not be able to notice a cyclist on our side as well. And we'll not be able to see, you know, a turning vehicle from a side street that well when we drive really high speed. And also, the second factor is the stopping distance. So that's the distance it takes for someone when they did realize a danger, a conflict, you know, they decide to stop. The distance it takes for a vehicle to stop. The higher the speed, the significantly longer it takes for a vehicle to stop. So there's much more high likelihood that we'll not be able to avoid that crash from happening in the first place. So again, speed really matters. That's why in our work, we focus a lot on managing speeds on our streets. Here, I want to say that you know, our aim here at the city is not anti-car. It's not trying to make driving through the city difficult. We want to keep traffic flowing through the city. We want to keep traffic flowing smoothly, efficiently, but safely. And we want to provide safe options for everyone in our communities, whether you walk, drive, take transit, bicycling, everyone deserves to be safe. You know, after all, right? It doesn't really matter if you cannot arrive at your destination safely. If you cannot do that, it doesn't really matter how fast, you know, you get there. Again, quickly, here is a quick summary of the progress we made so far. You know, thank you to the committee for helping us create the Safe Streets Medicine program. So since that program was created in 2022, you funded 237 Safe Streets projects. And I'm happy to report, you know, till this day, about 160 of those were already completed our streets and, you know, serving our residents. So the remaining 70 projects also are in different stages of design and implementation. We reduced speed limits and did other forms of street management on 60 miles of our major streets through about 60 different projects. You know, major corridors such as East Washington Avenue, actually Park Street, you know, received this treatment. And we have seen overwhelmingly positive results from the vast majority of the project. Again, we actually didn't see, you know, too much speed reduction for the average speed when we're talking about everyone. But we saw a significant reduction of people who drive really, really fast. You know, for example, you know, 50 mile above speed limit, we saw a huge reduction on that. And we complete our citywide rollout for the 20 is Plenty program to reduce the speed limit of all neighborhood streets to 20 miles per hour after successful piloting the program in two of our neighborhoods back in 2021. And the study shows that, you know, crashes in those two neighborhoods reduced by 41% and 44% respectively, comparing to the same time frame, 29% for a citywide, and also about 3 to 4% for the national data. So we're doing much better, and the 20s plenty neighborhoods did even better. And the city developed and implemented the Complete Green Streets Guide. It's a framework guiding the design of our future streets and the new streets under construction when we reconstruct those. Make the streets more complete for all users and building in green infrastructure. We also worked with our partners from engineering division, and we incorporate as many safety features as possible to all street reconstruction projects and almost all the resurfacing projects. And you all, you know, played a key role in almost all of them. So thank you for that. We also made our public engagement process more equitable. We were able to engage thousands of our community members through the process. You know, for example, we created a new program called Let's Talk Streets. And we bring city staff to neighborhoods instead of asking them to come to us, because we realized not every resident in the city has the ability to come to city meetings. So we bring ourselves to them. We attended many community events, and we reach out to them in ways that's more reachable to them. And the staff also worked very hard securing federal grants and bringing those dollars to the city. So for traffic engineering alone, in the last few years, we applied and secured over $20 million of safety-related federal funding to our community. And now we're implementing many of those projects. And I think more importantly, we are institutionalizing a new design and operations philosophy in the city. I think that's going to have a lasting impact on traffic safety in our city. You know, here I want to update the community and the our community on you know the some of the results we have been seeing so far. Again, we are working on our second progress report for Vision Zero. Those will be released. They're going to be a lot more data in there. But for this graph, what you are saying is the number of traffic fatalities within City of Madison limits for the last 6 years, and since we started Vision Zero in 2020. I want to point out that this data includes all city streets, county highways, state highways, and also private roadways in the City of Madison limits. So some of this city can control, some of this we cannot. But overall, we saw a pretty modest improvement on number of fatalities since 2020. In 2020, you know, there's some ups and downs, but you can see the general trend. In 2020, we had 15 fatalities. In 2025, we had 13. However, if you look at the traffic fatalities on City Madison controlled or partially controlled roadways, so those are, you know, city streets and some of the county highways, some of the state connecting highways that we have some control over. So all those data were included in there, but it does not include the roadways that we cannot control at all. So for this set of roadways, which are majority of roadways in the city of Madison, the improvements has been dramatically better. So we can see an even more clear trend of reduction. So in 2020, we had 12 fatalities on this portion of the streets that we can control. In 2025, right, reduced to 6. So that's a 50% reduction. You know, these are encouraging data, but you know, even one death is too many for us. And we'll not stop working on this till we reach our goal of zero fatalities and severe injuries on our streets. Another information that we have seen from the last couple of years is that not just the number of crashes, but where are the fatal crashes happening? We think that we have been quite effective at reducing and eliminating the fatal crashes within the main part of the city. So this diagram shows the 2025 crashes. So you know, aside the for a few fatal crashes on Beltline and Stockton Road, which city does not control, almost all other crashes happened right along the border of the city now. Right in those transition zones. As I mentioned, that we want to talk a little bit more about the role of enforcement. As you know, this we have received a lot of questions from the public members on this, so we want to address that. We believe, here in Madison, we believe enforcement is a key component of Vision Zero. When we started Vision Zero back in 2020, there are some cities actually took out enforcement from their Vision Zero framework. But here in Madison, we believe that Vision Zero should be encompassing enforcement, right? There has been some improvements that we can do, but we shouldn't throw out the baby with the bathwater. So we really appreciate working with our police department. So we collaborate closely with MPD, and we define a new way of enforcement. I think has been really helpful. We have also been working with some national organizations such as the Bloomberg Associates, through a Harvard Kennedy program that the mayor connected us with. I want to share a testimony from them. They told me that they work with many cities out there. They have never seen such a close and a positive working relationship between a traffic engineering department and a police department in any other cities in the US. So I think that says a lot. And when we work with MPD on how to best use enforcement to improve safety, we agreed on a couple of things. One is that enforcement should be safety focused. And the second, enforcement should be data driven. Not complaint driven, but should be data driven. So what they have been done is that thanks to the hard work to all the police officers out there, they have been focusing resources on most dangerous types of traffic violations out there. For example, excessive speeding. For example, OWI. For example, distracted driving. Right, instead of something like expired license plate. Those are important, but for now, we need to focus most our resource on the most dangerous types of traffic violations that creates most of the danger out there. And secondly, they focus on reinforcement on the high injury network that we developed with the support from this body. So with the help from UW-Madison Traffic Operations and the City Lab, we dive into the traffic safety data we had, and we developed a high injury network where most severe injuries happens in our city. And our officers has been focused enforcement on those roadways. But we need another tool. That's a speed safety cameras. As I mentioned, safe speed is a core principle of the safe system approach. And the speed safety cameras are a proven safety countermeasure endorsed by the Federal Highway Administration. naturally was one study from New York City. So they had a program implementing speeding specific cameras in school zones. So they saw speeding reduced by 63% during school hours. And I also took some statistics from the many researches that are used by Federal Highway Administration, which are shown on the right. For example, for the fixed units, so those are the specific cameras installed at the troublesome locations. So these are fixed locations, just measuring the speed at that point. And those units reduce crashes on urban principal arterials up to 54% for all crashes and 48% for injury crashes. And the P2P units, so those are point-to-point units. So you install them at the entrance of a facility and exit of a facility, and you calculate the average speed. So for those cameras, a reduced fatal and injury crashes by 37%. And for mobile units, that's the units that you install on trailers. Those can be moved around, and those reduce the fatality and injuries by 20%. But unfortunately, currently, this tool is prohibited by the state law in our state. So next, we want to talk about how we respond to fatal crashes. At this point, I'm going to turn over to my colleague, Captain Worley from the police department, talking about how they conduct police response and investigation.
Thank you, Director Yang. As Yang mentioned, when we have a fatal crash, our police department is one of the first people to respond. And our patrol officers are those first responding on scene with our partners at the Madison Fire Department. And often in a fatal crash or dealing with a extremely tragic and horrific scene that they are looking to stabilize and control while also provide life-saving measures to those individuals while preserving evidence all at the same time. When we have a fatal crash specifically, our officer in charge will, no matter the time of day, will reach out to the traffic command as well as notify our chief's office. When traffic command is notified, we respond with our serious and fatal traffic investigators. And we have two officers that their full-time job is to investigate and follow up on these crashes. So they specifically participate in those ongoing investigations and are on call to respond at any time of day or night to those serious injury crashes when they occur. Both of our traffic investigators are subject matter experts in fatal and serious crashes, as well as OWI investigations, and ensure that our department is equipped with those most up-to-date trainings for all of our patrol officers, and they play a role in that professional development and ongoing training. Our traffic investigators serve much like a detective would in a different type of case, where they gather all of the evidence and materials. And we'll then work with our Dane County District Attorney's Office on what those criminal charges could potentially be. They follow those cases through the entire court process, serving as that lead investigator. And also throughout that, stay in contact with our families that are involved, our witnesses or community members, partnering with our various city staff to make sure that we have that full and complete investigation. That all takes time. It takes time to gather video and evidence and process vehicles, cell phones, write warrants and develop probable cause on any aspect of these investigations. I do want to touch briefly on an update for this investigation. Suspect was arrested on Monday morning, and a press release I know did go out, and many news outlets did cover that. The initial appearance, I believe, was either yesterday or today, where a cash bond of $5,000 was set by a court commissioner. The suspect was originally booked on a negligent operation of a motor vehicle causing homicide. We did work with the district attorney's office, and I do believe that a formal charge of a second degree reckless homicide is what was officially charged by the district attorney's office. For this, a lot of details are in the criminal complaint that is written for these types of cases. What I will at least initially share here, as it has been released, speed was a significant and reckless factor in this case. Through video, with time and distance to get your speed and calculations and measurements, we believe that our suspect vehicle was traveling approximately 62 miles per hour in a 25 mile an hour zone. We did do a full investigation with the vehicle and the cell phone and the suspect on that day. At this time, the police department does not believe that any cell phone use played a role, nor any impairment. However, we are still waiting results of a legal blood draw that we often do in fatality crashes. As Director Tao mentioned earlier in one of his slides, when you have a significant speed, the reaction time and then stopping time of a vehicle is significantly increased. The faster you go, the more distance you need to stop, and the faster you go, the shorter the reaction time is to be able to respond to whatever may be presented in your roadway. We did also, as I believe one of our comments at the beginning mentioned, provide significant enforcement to the Park Street area for that immediate week following. We continue to provide enforcement along Park Street, along with the rest of the city. Our traffic complaints are one of the top complaints across our entire city in all six of our police districts. And so we do our best to manage our school zones and all the different complaints that come in from across the city. As was mentioned, we focus a lot on the high injury network and use a lot of data-driven statistics and information, working very closely with our other city, state, and county partners to develop those data metrics and where our resources can best be deployed. We also continue to work with our different partners on grants that focus on speed enforcement, alcohol for drunk drivers, pedestrian enforcement, bike and bike safety. And we do focus primarily on our hazardous violations compared to our non-hazardous violations as a practice within our police department at this time. It was mentioned very briefly, so I feel that I should just touch on it. Although traffic is a top complaint, we do have a traffic team of five officers and one sergeant to cover the entire city. Each one of those five officers and sergeant are a liaison directly to one of our police districts for our six police districts. And then we work very closely with all of our patrol officers so that in their proactive time, when they are not responding to 911 or non-emergency calls, where they can focus their traffic enforcement efforts as well. And we work closely with the district command from the traffic section to share and provide those data-driven metrics and information. So that is kind of the police department's role in the investigation and kind of the update I have specific to this this fatality investigation. And at this time, I will yield back to Director Yang.
Thank you, Captain. I will follow up, the police investigation by providing the information on, traffic engineering's rapid response. So, whenever a crash like this happened, as soon as we learn about those, we will go out to verify traffic control to make sure that we have all necessary traffic control in place, make sure they are above standards. Almost all the time, we are above and beyond standards. But we just want to, double check and make sure that immediately. We also, organize a team of experts, traffic engineers, designers. They are the, rapid response team. And, one of the things they do is actually go out to do a field visit. And also they will pick a time that a condition that, trying to duplicate, kind of replicate what happened as much as possible, to the original crash. Like, the day of week, the time of day, the weather condition. So really trying to, turn over every stone and trying to capture anything that we may not be able to notice, during different time or during different condition. And we review the past crash history, trying to identify whether, this happened before, or whether there's a pattern, any pattern associated with it. We also collaborate with, with police, assist with their investigation if they need us, and also, communicate with them, trying to understand what happened. And we review the police reports very closely when they are available. Really trying to understand, all the factors involved in a crash. And, more importantly, identify any possible short-term measures to be implemented quickly. For example, for this case, as soon as we suspected that speeding might be a concern, we sent our team out right away to Park Street and installed flags on all the speed limit signs to remind drivers to slow down. And we also identify longer term safety improvements that we'll be working on and hopefully to get those done as soon as possible. So with that, I'm going to turn over to Sean and then back to Christoph, talk about the past projects and the future plans for Park Street. Sean?
Thank you, Yang. So this intersection, we have identified throughout the years for improvements with Vision Zero and other programs. So the top picture shows the intersection from 2018, and the bottom picture shows the intersection in 2021. So the biggest improvement obviously was the installation of the flashing beacon, which we installed in 2019. You know, previously we didn't even have ped crossing signs at the intersection. We also improved the crosswalks in 2019 at Continental, higher visibility crosswalks, and added the yield lines. And those are just some of the improvements that we've had at the intersection. You know, due to it being a high crossing location. We also altered the median nose in 2019. Previously, there wasn't protection for pedestrians crossing the intersection. And with the project of the flashing beacon, we added the nose to allow for protection for people in the median crossing the street. So this intersection has seen some improvements throughout the year, but, you know, there's definitely some more work that needs to be done at this intersection and Park Street in general.
Yeah, also I want to emphasize, I can already mention this, we also reduced the speed limit on Park Street from 30 mile per hour to 25 mile per hour in 2021. So thank you, Sean.
So there's major changes in store for Park Street. We are currently in design on the North-South Bus Rapid Transit project. We are also in the federal funding process for this project. We are nearly complete with environmental review. That is today's Route B, which includes the segment on Park Street. On Park, that includes complete reconstruction from south of Wingo Drive up to Fish Hatchery Road and includes a new ped bike path along Park Street from Badger to Fish Hatchery. And we see this project not just as a BRT project. We see this as an overall street improvement project, as an overall safety improvement project that includes projects like intersection improvements along the entire length of the route, crosswalks, pedestrian refuges, bulb outs, as well as some new traffic signals, including Burr Oak and Cedar. Next slide. Get next slide here. There it is. Here you can look at the Burr Oak intersection specifically, and you can see what we can do with a larger reconstruction here. So this is the design. You will see this posted on the city website. It includes a new traffic signal. That is mentioned, we have filed the traffic signal warrant for. It includes improved crosswalks on all four quadrants, placing crosswalks on both sides of the intersection. Both of the crosswalks across Park Street have pedestrian refuges. It also includes that new path on one side of Park Street, which has a raised crossing as it crosses Burr Oak. And you can see it includes a considerable cleanup of the intersection geometry here, eliminating the current slip lane, doing tighter streets and tighter turn radii, which also slows down traffic and makes an intersection safer. So this is what is in the works here. But as noted, this project requires federal funding and is going through the process for that funding. Next slide. The other thing we've heard a lot about with regards to Park Street that I recognize is quite confusing is street jurisdiction and the ownership of streets. Next slide. So if you look at a map of Madison, streets that on the surface look the same are actually jurisdictionally quite different. And we have a whole mix of different kinds of roadways within the city. We have the interstates, which are obvious, and U.S. highways, which most of them very much feel like U.S. highways. But we also have U.S. connecting highways. We have state trunk highways. We have state trunk connecting highways. We have county trunk highways. We have municipal roads, and we have sub-private roadways within the city. And this jurisdiction makes a major difference in how roadways are maintained, but also in how they are designed and built. Next slide. So here is how that works. An interstate highway is fully managed by WSDOT. They maintain it, they design it, they need to get federal design approvals for that. but it is their highway. And the same is true for a typical U.S. highway. However, there is also such a thing, road, that is incorporated within the U.S. highway network. Those are maintained by the City of Madison and designed by the City of Madison, but require WSDOT approvals and even certain federal approvals for the design. Similarly, state trunk highways also have state trunk connecting highways, which again are City of Madison designed and maintained, but subject to WSDOT approvals. We also have some county trunk highways within the city, and those are generally maintained and designed by Dane County. Next slide. I want to particularly highlight the connecting highways, since Park Street is one of them. These are roadways that are owned, maintained, and operated by the city, but because they are incorporated in the state highway system, WSDOT reviews and approves major maintenance and traffic control changes. So if we want to make a change on this roadway, like the installation of a new traffic signal, that has to go through a WSDOT approval. Funding here is also a little more complicated because the city receives connecting highway aid money to help maintain these to state standards. And when we do reconstruction projects, those reconstruction projects are a state-local partnership, a mix of state funding and a local cost share. And in some cases, those reconstruction projects are designed by the state, and in some cases, those reconstruction projects are designed by the city. All of this matters a lot because, next slide, as Yang noted earlier, the highways, which are also part of the state and federal highway system, are really a lot of our most dangerous in terms of the number of crashes. And I do not say this to point fingers at any jurisdiction. I think these are inherently some of our most challenging roadways. Major arterials and highways are the kind of roadways where we are most likely to see fatal and severe injury crashes. But what this inherently means is that this work has to be a partnership with WSDOT, as well as a partnership with Dane County on their highways, and as noted, with a layer of federal approval on top of it. So improving these requires us to continue to work closely with WSDOT and to really align our priorities on what we are trying to accomplish on these streets. And that includes sometimes what seem like really technical questions, things like a traffic signal warrant. Different engineers will interpret that same warrant differently. And two engineers may look at the same intersection. One of them says it justifies a signal and the other says it doesn't. And these are the kind of conversations we need to have on these roadways. Next slide. So actions going forward. One of the frustrating things about any crash like this is we don't know everything immediately. And it takes a while as we sort of gather information and pull together what we know to really get to a question of what could we do to prevent this from happening again. And one of the things we are really insistent on is the lessons we learn from any crash are not just applied to the location where that crash happened, because it's very unlikely that the next crash happens at exactly the same place. We want those lessons to be applied across the entire city. So what we are starting to do is look at what we've been doing already and look at what we haven't been doing and think about what might we do that might prevent something like this in the future. One of the things we flagged here is that we can use some data we have, like streetlight data, to really identify locations with excessive speeding and see if there's a set of strategies that really apply to those locations. But you can see the white space on the slide, and that's because there will be more that fills this up. And what we hear from you today will help us add to that. What I would say finally as a conclusion here is we in the United States have spent most of a century designing streets to move as many cars as possible, as fast as possible. And I think crashes like this one are the outcome of that design philosophy. But we can do better. We know we can do better. And we're trying to catch up. And that takes thinking, that takes money, and that takes community support. So we really appreciate everyone who's here, and we really appreciate everyone who wants to work for better streets, because it will take all of us to get there. So thank you very much.